Thank you very much, Valerie, for the Bible reading. Now, religion is a funny word, isn't it? I mean, we talk about religion all the time. It's a word we frequently use. Indeed, we're going to have a census, the 10-yearly census this year, 2021. And one of the key questions on the census will be, what religion are you? Are you Christian or Muslim or Buddhist, Hindu, Jewish, and so on? So we talk about religion all the time, but nobody agrees what the word actually means. Have you ever tried to define the word religion? There's no agreed definition. In English, the word itself, we think probably comes from the Latin, and it seems to derive from the monastic rules. But really, nobody is certain. Indeed, the modern sense of the word religion that we use today has only really been around since the 17th century. Even the word Hindu, for example, is basically a fairly modern invention, since it originally referred to people of the subcontinent who weren't Turkic or Muslim. That's all, they just were defined against being something. Anyway, the good news for today is, because there is no agreed definition of religion, it means that I can give you one as an authority. So I claim no authority other than there is no official one, so mine is as good as any. Here we go. I would say religion is any man-made set of rules by which we seek to manipulate God. I'll say that again. I'm defining religion as any man-made set of rules by which we seek to manipulate God. And as a Christian pastor, I want to go further and claim that Christianity is not a religion, or at least it can be a religion, but it's not supposed to be. Now, I realize that is quite a claim, but I think that's what we see very clearly in Mark's gospel today. This morning, what we're going to do, we're going to focus especially on that passage in Mark 2, verses 23 to 28. But I want us this morning to see that it's part of a sandwich. That's why the Bible reading from Valerie was from verse 18 of chapter 2 through to verse 6 of chapter 3. It's because our passage is the meat in the sandwich, and you understand it by comparing the bit beforehand and the bit afterwards. And we're going to see, we're going to look at this passage twice, negatively and then positively. First of all, we're going to see Jesus' devastating critique of religion. And then we're going to think about what this tells us about Jesus. What does it mean to call Jesus the Lord of the Sabbath? So number one, religion is dead. Religion is dead. See, in all of these three passages, the Pharisees are preoccupied with keeping the rules. They're convinced that by keeping their rules, that is the key to receiving God's blessing. It was the conclusion that the Pharisees had drawn from the exile a few centuries earlier. God had judged his people, they said, because they didn't keep the rules. In particular, the rules about the Sabbath. They thought that was the key reason why they'd gone into exile. So what they did to make sure that didn't happen again was come up with lots and lots and lots of rules. So they didn't even come close to breaking what the Bible said about the Sabbath. And so by the first century AD, the Jewish Talmud contained, can you believe it, 39 broad classes of work that were all forbidden on the Sabbath. And each class then had endless subdivisions and qualifications. So for example, fingernails, you weren't allowed to cut them, that was work on the Sabbath. Only one letter was allowed to be written on the Sabbath. Any more was work. A bucket, it could be tied with a belt, but not with a rope. That would be work. In fact, thinking about all of this, the Jewish Mishnah itself comments, "The rules about the Sabbath are as a mountain hanging by a hair, for the scripture is scanty and the rules are many." Kind of sums it up. And of course, that's what we find in verse 23. So Jesus and his disciples are walking through the cornfields as they go about their ministry. And the disciples pick some of the heads of corn as they walk through the field. And they rub them together in their hands to remove the husk and then pop the grain into their mouths. Just a little snack as they walk along. But then, acting rather like overzealous police, sort of looking for people to charge during lockdown, the Pharisees leap out of a bush to arrest the disciples. "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" they ask Jesus. And before we go on to see the answer, the reply that Jesus gives, we first got to be clear exactly what the Pharisees are accusing the disciples of doing. I want to be clear. They were not accusing the disciples of stealing. Deuteronomy 23 specifically allows for the disciples to do what they were doing. It's perfectly acceptable, as long as you were just passing by, to take some of the corns in your hand as you went through. That was not in dispute. No, Exodus 34 forbids there to be any ploughing or harvesting on the Sabbath. And that is what the Pharisees are claiming. They are claiming that, in effect, the disciples are ploughing and harvesting corn on the Sabbath, allegedly sort of working for their food. And I want us to see this morning that that is always how religion works, that the letter of the law trumps the spirit of the law. Never mind that the disciples were not breaking any commands of the Old Testament, makes no difference. They were breaking all these extra Sabbath laws that the Pharisees had brought in, so they must be disobeying God. But what we see is that religion has no power to change anyone. No, most of the time laws are there to prevent us from doing bad things rather than enabling us to do good things. They have no power to actually make us do good. So the national speed limit, for example, it restrains some of the time. It restrains drivers from driving too fast. But the sign can't actually make people become good drivers, can it? So always be wary when you hear people saying that our traditions are more important than the principles that they're supposed to enact. Something's gone wrong at that point. For example, Professor John Drain, he tells a great story about a time when he was, this is when he was teaching a professor at Stirling University in Scotland. And he tells of one occasion, he quite often at the weekend would go out to preach at some of the chapels in the Highlands. And one particular Sunday, he was preaching at a church way in a little village way up in the Highlands of Scotland, and the service started at 11:05. So there he was. It was about 11 o'clock, and he was, presumably the church secretary of this little chapel. And as they were waiting for the service to start, he just said, "Well, can I just ask, why does your service start at 11:05? That's quite an odd time to start a church service." And the man explained to him, "Well, it's all because of the bus timetable. You see, the bus timetable has the bus arriving in the centre of the village at about 11 o'clock. So what we do is we've always allowed enough time for people to get off the bus, takes them a few minutes to get into the church, and so we start at 11:05. And at that point, John Drain sort of looked around the church, which was pretty empty, not many people there, and so he asked sort of expectantly, hopefully, saying, so how many people come on the bus, i.e., you know, how many people are just about to arrive in a couple of minutes? Oh, the church secretary interrupted, no, the bus stopped running more than 10 years ago. Rules are good servants, but bad masters. And who knows, maybe it was stories like this in Mark's gospel that caused the apostle Paul to write this in 2 Corinthians 3, that God has made us competent as ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the spirit. For the letter kills, but the spirit gives life. You see, religion kills. Any religion, including Christian religion, kills. And as we saw in the Bible reading Valerie gave to us, it comes most starkly at the beginning of chapter 3. This time the Pharisees are complaining about Jesus' healing on the Sabbath. I mean, come on, how does that work? I know the NHS, particularly at the moment, I know NHS staff have to work very, very hard on a Sunday. That isn't what's going on here, is it? Jesus is not doing some night shift at A&E here. He is healing a man instantly like that. That's not work, is it? Jesus doesn't break out in a sweat. No, notice how Jesus puts it in verse 4. Which is lawful on the Sabbath? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill? And that sums up religion for you. Religion kills. And in particular, religion kills Jesus. That's how verse 6 concludes this section. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians, that's the followers of King Herod, how they might kill Jesus. So you see, faith in Jesus is not a religion. If you trust in religion, any religion, that will lead you to hate Jesus. Because Jesus is not compatible with religion. It's what the new wine and the old wineskins was all about. The new pulls away from the old. They cannot stay together. Religion is dead, so you need to bury it and move on. Tradition, rules, they won't save you because only Jesus can. With religion, you're still in charge and you think, well, everything was okay, everything will carry on okay, as long as we keep the rules, as long as we keep the traditions as they are. But when we do that, when we're just worried about keeping the rules, if we're honest, God is at our beck and call, rather like a genie in a lamp. But following Jesus is not like that. When we follow Jesus, what we see here is both more liberating and more scary, because it means we're not in charge, Jesus is. And he's the way maker. He's the one who makes all things happen. So what we're going to do now is we're going to pause there and we're going to sing this great new song, Waymaker. So thanks, Karen, for the activity. Welcome back, everyone. Remember, we've had number one, religion is dead. But now number two, long live the King. See, many people, when they're reading this bit of Mark's Gospel, they make a mistake of thinking that Jesus is engaging in a debate with the Pharisees about the Sabbath law here. They think that this is really an argument about how you interpret the Old Testament, particularly the Sabbath law. You know, as if Jesus's point here is just people matter more than rules or something like that. But if you think that, you are completely missing Mark's point here. This story is not about the Sabbath at all. This is all about Jesus. It's forcing us to ask, who is Jesus? And we can see that this is not about the Sabbath by the answer that Jesus gives to the Pharisees. So he reminds them of an Old Testament story. We're back to verse 25 of Mark 2 now. Jesus reminds the Pharisees about an incident in the life of David before he became king. Now, what I want to underline here is that this incident has got nothing to do with the Sabbath at all. You see, if Jesus was if the key thing in Jesus' mind here was the Sabbath, then he chooses a very strange story to illustrate his point. Because he picks a story that's not about the Sabbath in any way, shape or form. No, back in 1 Samuel 21, David is on the run. Yes, he's been anointed king by Samuel. But at the moment, he's hiding from the present king, King Saul. David's men are tired and hungry. So David goes to the priest for help. And when he asks the priest for bread, the priest has no bread except the consecrated bread, the bread that was just for the priests to eat. But faced with the dilemma that David was in, that his men needed feeding, he's obviously persuaded that David's urgent need justifies the priest taking the bread and giving the consecrated bread to David's men. So do you get what's going on in this story? Back in 1 Samuel, David is the king in waiting. He's been anointed king by Samuel, but the old king, King Saul, is still on the throne, and Saul is trying to kill David. So this is a story about David asking for bread to feed his followers so they can eat while they're facing opposition from the current king, the old regime. Now, back in Mark 2, this also explains further Jesus' esoteric comments about new wine and old wineskin. Remember in verses 21 and 22. Old wineskins cannot hold new wine. Jesus is reminding them, King Saul cannot bear new King David. Old Israel must give way to new Israel. The old system of the Pharisees must give way to the new King of Israel, Jesus Christ himself. The King is dead. Long live the King. That's what's going on here. That Jesus is the new King, the Son of David. That his mission and his status allows him to set aside these previous rules. And we see that's all what Mark's gospel is all about. For example, in Mark chapter 10, Jesus heals a blind man who addresses Jesus as Son of David. Clearly a popular title for Jesus, a claim of being the Messiah. And then in chapter 12, Jesus is discussing again with the religious leaders, and he discusses the popular notion that the Messiah, the Christ, would be called the Son of David. So all of this is helping to explain what's going on in these passages. It also explains the healing of the Sabbath on the Sabbath in chapter 3. Because the Sabbath was meant to be a signpost pointing to the coming of the Lord, the coming kingdom of God. And the Jews, by the time of Jesus, they'd come to view the longed for day of the Lord that the prophets called it. They longed for this day of the Lord to be like a Sabbath of the whole of human history. So in verse 2, what we read is that the Pharisees are expecting Jesus to heal on the Sabbath. The way Mark records this, he's showing that clearly healing on the Sabbath was a common pattern for Jesus. Yes, Jesus healed all the time, but the Pharisees were waiting, expecting, because they kind of knew that Jesus especially healed on the Sabbath. He did it deliberately, because he was trying to show something. Intentionally healing on the Sabbath as a foretaste, a sign of the kingdom that Jesus so confidently announced. See, according to the book of Leviticus, the maimed and disabled were forbidden for entering the temple. They were unable to fully participate in the worship of God. So in healing this man in this way, Jesus was ushering him into God's kingdom. He was pointing forward to the Sabbath rest in the new heaven and the new earth. Isn't that great? And therefore, what's going on here is not so much a discussion about the Sabbath. It's about the identity of Jesus. It causes us as we read it to think, who is this guy who does these things? Verses 27 and 28 of chapter 2. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man, that's Jesus, is Lord even of the Sabbath. Of course Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. He made the Sabbath. He created the Sabbath. The Pharisees are lecturing Jesus on Sabbath laws, and Jesus is sort of mocking their presumption. You know, he's saying, were you there when the earth and the heavens were created? Did you put the sun, moon and stars into the sky? Were you present when I built rest into the very fabric of creation? Who are you to tell me about what to do on the seventh day of the week? Now, I hope you're beginning to see how our two themes this morning come together. Number one, religion is dead. Number two, long live the King. See, religion is not only dead, we've seen already that it also kills. Religion will always fight against the King. You know, we hate it. My precious. All of which forces you to pick sides, isn't it? Because religion always fights against the King, and it makes you think, well, whose side am I on? Am I on Jesus' side and ready for religion to hate me too? Therefore, the plot thickens, or according to verses 5 and 6 of chapter 3, the plot hardens. The Pharisees hated Jesus, and now that heart attitude turns into action as they plot, literally, to kill him. The reference in verse 5 to stubborn hearts is, in Greek, it's more literally the Old Testament phrase of hard-heartedness, which occurs regularly in the Old Testament and always refers to that deliberate disobedience of God's revelation. God reveals himself, and when his people just ignore the revelation of himself, that is called hard-heartedness. And that's what we see here. In other words, as I've said, this is so much more than a religious argument. It's much more than an argument over the fine point of Sabbath law. This is a callous rejection of Jesus and all he stands for. Jesus is claiming to be Lord of the Sabbath, and the Pharisees reject him outright for doing so. And that's the problem with Jesus. As we see, as Mark's gospel goes on, the plot always hardens. So we work our way through Mark's gospel, people's responses to Jesus tend to harden, for good or for ill. The crowd cannot remain merely interested in Jesus for long. Jesus seeks you out and he forces you to make up your mind about him. And either way, whichever decision you come to about Jesus, it becomes increasingly hardened. As J.C. Ryle once put it, the same fire that softens the wax hardens the clay. What softens the wax hardens the clay. So maybe you've still got lots of questions about religious observance and Sabbath law, etc., and that's fine. But for now, Jesus says, just put them to the side for the moment. Jesus says, you have to decide about me first before we come on to that. Who do you say I am? The Lord of the Sabbath? See, Jesus is saying that religious rules and rituals are meaningless without me, without Jesus. That I, Jesus, am the fulfillment of all religion. That if you do not trust in me personally, if you do not worship me as your Lord and Savior, then your religion will be nothing but rules and rituals that achieve nothing, that do nothing. And therefore, you will never actually accomplish anything. It will be a work that never accomplishes, instead of a rest that you can enjoy forever. Because that's what the Sabbath points to, when you know the Lord of the Sabbath. But as the Pharisees illustrate, while you remain caught up working through your rules, trying to please God your way, your heart will actually become increasingly hardened towards him. Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. And the same fire that softens the wax hardens the clay. There's a wonderful invitation. We're going to finish our service now by singing Come People of the Risen King. But just listen to that song and respond. Jesus welcomes you to enjoy his Sabbath rest. Are you going to be hardened by that, or are you going to be softened by his gracious invitation? Let's sing together.